Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn, Dorothy Gundy, and Phil Deerking. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
2017 was another big year for technology, with many new products launched to make our phones, homes, and cars smarter. But the news also included stories about technology companies seeking to earn back the public trust. Social media giant Facebook was criticized for not doing more to prevent fake news stories from appearing and being shared. The criticism came after many false stories were posted on Facebook during the 2016 presidential campaign. Some blamed such stories for affecting the outcome of the 2016 election. In response, the company announced several new policies aimed at preventing users from spreading misinformation and fake news. Later, Facebook said it found that a Russian-based operation had spent $100,000 to buy advertisements promoting political and social issues in the U.S. The company said it was investigating possible ways Russian sources may have influenced the election. Facebook also came under criticism after several people posted videos of murders or suicides that remained for hours. CEO and co-founder Mark Zuckerberg called the videos heartbreaking. In early May, Facebook said it was hiring an additional 3,000 people to help identify and remove violent and hateful content.
Apple celebrated the 10th anniversary of the first iPhone with the launch of its iPhone X. Like many other new phone models, it has a bigger screen area that covers the face from edge to edge. The iPhone X has no home button, supports wireless charging, and includes new photo and lighting effects. iPhone X was heavily publicized for its price of $999 and the new Face ID recognition system. Face ID replaces previous fingerprint recognition technology. Apple said its testing showed there is only a 1 in a million chance of another person being able to unlock someone else's device with Face ID. Apple also admitted to slowing some older iPhones. The company explained it only took the action last year to prevent battery-related shutdowns. Apple's action and the company's decision to keep it secret led to widespread criticism from industry analysts and lawsuits from iPhone users.
Volvo announced that beginning in 2019, all its new vehicles will have electric motors. The Chinese-owned company was the first major manufacturer to set such a date. Volvo says it will offer 5 fully electric vehicles between 2019 and 2021. In France, officials said the country plans to ban the sale of gasoline and diesel-powered cars across the country by 2040. German carmakers BMW, Audi, and Volkswagen also have several new electric car and sport utility vehicles in the works. In the U.S., Ford said it would launch a new electric SUV by 2020, while General Motors began selling its popular Chevrolet Bolt in all U.S. states. U.S.-based Tesla announced it would begin selling the much-awaited Model 3. Then last month, founder and CEO Elon Musk showed off the company's new electric-powered truck, called Tesla Semi. He said the truck will be able to travel 800 kilometers on a single charge while pulling a full load of 36,000 kilograms. Production is set to begin in 2019, with no price yet announced. At Google, a male engineer wrote a memo suggesting there are biological differences preventing women from progressing the same as men in technology. The document, which also criticized Google's diversity efforts, was published online. Google CEO Sundar Pichai apologized to employees for the memo, which he said had advanced harmful gender stereotypes. The engineer was dismissed from his position.
We heard more about Bitcoin in 2017 than ever before. This virtual currency shocked many in the financial world by rising from $1,000 in January 2017 to more than $19,000 in early December. Japanese investors are believed to account for a large percentage of Bitcoin trading, causing the cryptocurrency to reach record value. In Venezuela, as the national currency loses value, people have turned to Bitcoin for daily uses. Even North Korea hackers joined in to steal millions of dollars to get around economic sanctions. Bitcoin will continue to be watched in the coming year as more people buy it and the trading system further develops.
The U.S. Federal Communications Commission, or FCC, voted to end the internet policy known as net neutrality. The rules had prevented internet service providers from interfering with traffic from some websites while providing faster service to others. Under the new rules, internet providers will be free to block competing applications. Service providers would also be able to slow down competing services or offer faster speeds to companies that pay more. The government said the decision was based on its belief that net neutrality regulation was not necessary. Opponents said they feared lifting the rules would give businesses control over what users see and do online.
One of technology's most active areas is robotics, and 2017 saw some exciting new developments. We reported on robots designed to help doctors perform surgery and help children or disabled people. Another smart machine was used to explore Japan's damaged Fukushima nuclear plant. another robot led an orchestra performance, while several others carried food and other items to people. In Dubai, officials launched a police robot to guard the streets and offer help. Saudi Arabia even claimed to be the first country in the world to give citizenship to a robot. The female robot, named Sophia, was presented as an example of how robot technology and artificial intelligence will make machines more human-like in the future. The robot was even interviewed in front of a crowd. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
And I'm Brian Lynn. American health officials recently approved the first gene therapy treatment for an inherited disease, the type that can pass from parent to child. The treatment improves the sight of patients suffering from a genetic mutation that destroys their ability to see. It is the first gene therapy approved where a corrective gene is given directly to patients. People with the disease usually start losing their sight before they are 18. This often progresses to total blindness. The gene that causes the disease could suddenly appear when a child is born with a copy of the gene from both parents. Only a few thousand people in the U.S. are thought to have the condition. Patients receive the therapy, called Luxturna, through two injections, one for each eye. These replace the problem gene that prevents the retina, a tissue at the back of the eye, from changing light into electronic signals sent to the brain. Misty Lovelace received one of the early treatments. She said, "One of the best things I've ever seen since surgery are the stars. I never knew that they were little dots that twinkled." Drug maker Spark Therapeutics has not set the price for the treatment. Its own research, however, has put the value of the therapy at around $1 million. The company says the reason for the high price is due to their prediction that Luxturna will be given only once, with lasting positive effects. To date, the company has researched patients in a study for as long as 4 years and has not seen their vision worsen. The Food and Drug Administration has approved 3 gene therapies since August. The 2 other treatments are specially designed treatments for forms of blood cancer. The approval marks an important growth for a field of study that has struggled with safety concerns. In 1999, a patient treated for a rare metabolic disorder at the University of Pennsylvania died. In another case, patients treated for an immune disorder later developed leukemia. Dr. David Valley said, "The excitement about the possibilities for genetic medicine create opportunities for research on individual diseases." University of Pennsylvania researcher Dr. Jean Bennett said she and her husband, Dr. Albert McGuire, first imagined using genetic medicine to treat retinal blindness in the mid-1980s.
but it took many years to develop the science and technology. The first animal tests happened in 2000, and the first human tests in 2007. I'm Phil Dierking.
From VOA Learning English, welcome to The Making of a Nation. I'm Steve Ember. In our last program, we talked about President Thomas Jefferson's decisions about who would be in his new government. Jefferson was the leader of a new political party, the Republican Party, but not the Republican Party we know today. In fact, Jefferson's party laid the roots for today's Democratic Party. During the election of 1800, the Jeffersonian Republicans struggled bitterly with the opposition party, the Federalists. Jefferson won that election. In his inaugural address of 1801, he said he wanted to work with the Federalists for the good of the nation. But he chose no Federalists for his cabinet. All the cabinet officers were strong Republicans. All were loyal to Thomas Jefferson. Once President Jefferson formed his cabinet, he began planning the policies of his administration.
Jefferson, of course, thought central government should be almost invisible. He saw its prime role as acting as a sort of referee between the various states, and he wanted to keep it to a minimum.
Andrew O'Shaughnessy directs a Center for Jefferson Studies at Monticello, Thomas Jefferson's home in Virginia. He says Jefferson was especially concerned about the public debt. In the first year of Jefferson's presidency, the government owed millions of dollars. Each year, the debt grew larger because of the interest charged on these loans. Jefferson wanted to balance the budget. Jefferson discussed his financial policy with his two closest advisors. The advisors were Secretary of State James Madison and Treasury Secretary Albert Gallatin. The men agreed that the government must stop spending as much money as it did under former President John Adams. And they agreed that the government must pay its debts as quickly as possible. Albert Gallatin said, "We must have a strong policy. The debt must be paid. If we do not do this, our children, our grandchildren, and many generations to come will have to pay for our mistakes." Jefferson began saving money by cutting unnecessary jobs in the executive branch. He reduced the number of ambassadors, and he dismissed all the tax inspectors. Congress would have to take the next steps. Most government offices, Jefferson said, were created by laws of Congress. Congress alone must act on these positions. The citizens of the United States have paid for these jobs with their taxes. It is not right or just for the government to take more than it needs from the people. President Jefferson also wanted to cut taxes on the production and sale of some products, including whiskey and tobacco. He hoped the government could get all the money it needed from import taxes and from the sale of public lands. The Federalists were furious. They warned that Jefferson's financial program would crush the nation. They declared there would be anarchy if Federalist officials were dismissed. Most people, however, were happy. They liked what Jefferson said. They especially liked his plan to cut taxes. Jefferson's biggest critic was his longtime political opponent, Alexander Hamilton. Hamilton had served as the nation's first Treasury Secretary. Now he was a private lawyer in New York City. He published his criticism of Jefferson in a newspaper he started, the New York Evening Post. In Congress, elected officials also debated the president's proposal to cut taxes. Federalists said it was dangerous for the government to depend mainly on import taxes. They said such a policy would lead to smuggling. People would try to bring goods into the United States secretly without paying customs fees on them. Federalists also said that if the United States cut taxes, it would not have enough money to pay its debts. Then no one would want to invest in the United States again. Republicans said they were not afraid of smugglers. The danger, they said, would come from taxing the American people. There was no need for production and sales taxes. And they said the American people knew it. The Republicans also said they were sure the government would have enough money to pay its debts. The Republicans won this legislative fight. Both the Senate and the House of Representatives voted to approve the president's plan to cut taxes. Congress also had another of Jefferson's proposals to debate. Jefferson wanted to reduce the number of federal courts. The issue had roots in the political divisions between the Federalist and Republican parties, and it started in the closing days of the previous president's term. John Adams was a Federalist. Before Adams left office, Congress passed a Judiciary Act. This act gave Adams the power to appoint as many judges as he wished. The act was a way for the Federalists to keep control of one branch of government after losing the presidency and their majority in Congress in the election of 1800. So President Adams quickly created new courts and named new judges. Just as quickly, the Senate approved them. The papers of appointment were signed. The appointed men were known as midnight judges. However, some of the midnight judges did not receive their papers or commissions before Thomas Jefferson was sworn into office. The new president refused to give them their commissions. Federalist congressmen claimed that the president was trying to interfere with the judiciary. This interference, they said, violated the Constitution. Republican congressmen argued that the Constitution gave Congress the power to create and eliminate courts. They said the former administration had no right to appoint the so-called midnight judges. The Republicans won this argument, too. Congress approved President Jefferson's proposal to reduce the federal courts. Congress then turned to other business. But the question of the midnight judges would not die. One reason the issue remained important was because of a man named William Marbury. Marbury was one of the midnight judges who had never received his commission. He asked the Supreme Court to decide whether the government was required to give him his commission. The Chief Justice of the United States, John Marshall, was a member of the Federalist Party.
Jefferson and Marshall hate each other. In fact, Marshall gives him the oath for the inauguration and goes back to his room and says, well, a terrorist has just taken over the government. I hope we will be able to survive him.
Joseph Ellis is a historian who has written many books about early American history. He says John Marshall was a towering figure who had an entirely different view of the federal government than Jefferson. Marshall believed the Supreme Court should have the right to veto bills passed by Congress and signed by the president. In the Marbury case, he saw a chance to put this idea into law. Marshall wrote his decision carefully. First, he said that Marbury did have a legal right to his judicial commission. Then he said that Marbury had been denied this legal right. He said no one, not even the president, could take away a person's legal rights. Next, Marshall noted that Marbury had taken his request to the Supreme Court under the terms of a law passed in 1789. That law gave citizens the right to ask the high court to order action by any lower court or by any government official. Marshall explained that the Constitution carefully limits the powers of the Supreme Court. The court can hear direct requests involving diplomats or the states. It cannot rule on other cases until a lower court has ruled. So, Marshall said, the 1789 law allowed Marbury to take his case directly to the Supreme Court. But the Constitution did not. The Constitution, he added, is the first law of the land. Therefore, the congressional law is unconstitutional and has no power. Chief Justice Marshall succeeded in doing all he had hoped to do. He made clear that Marbury had a right to his judicial commission. He also saved himself from a battle with the administration. Most importantly, he claimed for the Supreme Court the power to rule on laws passed by Congress. The case of Marbury versus Madison established that the Supreme Court, not the President or the Congress, has the final say on what the Constitution means. Jefferson did not like Marshall's decision, but Joseph Ellis says that Jefferson was awed by how the Chief Justice argued his case.
Jefferson says to his friends, if you ever talk to Marshall, don't say anything, because whatever you say, he will take it and he will twist it. He calls about twistifications of John Marshall.
Jefferson waited for the Supreme Court to use this new power to change Congress's laws. Several times during Jefferson's presidency, Federalists claimed that laws passed by the Republican Congress violated the Constitution. But they never asked the Supreme Court to reject those laws. The case of Marbury versus Madison was one of the most important decisions about how America's government operates. But historians say another act during Thomas Jefferson's presidency affected America in an even bigger way.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.